This is CliffCentral.com.
For the past year, scholars James Lindsay, Helen Pluckrose, and Peter Boghossian have sent fake papers to various academic journals, which they describe as specializing in activism, or what they call grievance studies. Their stated mission has been to expose just how easy it is to get absurdities and morally fashionable political ideas published as legitimate academic research. To date, they've had an extraordinary success rate. 7 papers have passed through peer review and have been published, embarrassingly for those papers, the journals, including a 3,000-word excerpt of Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, believe it or not, rewritten in the language of intersectionality theory and published in the gender studies journal Aphelia, which actually has a pretty good name. Well, up to now. So I'm very happy to have Peter and James and Helen with me this fine day to discuss precisely what's gone on here. First of all, you three, I've got to say congratulations. I know that you're probably in a lot of trouble, but I just love this kind of mischief making, and it sort of exposes the very thin veneer on so much of these kind of ridiculous courses that they offer in academia now, right?
Yeah, I'd like to, this is Peter, I'd like to give an example, a specific example of one, if that's okay.
Sure.
So one of the papers we wrote targeted the journal in the field Fat Studies, and the journal Fat Studies is the flagship journal of Fat Studies. It's literally Fat Studies. It's what one would think about exercise, nutrition, or the complications of diabetes, which my mom died from. But it's about putting out this idea, particularly to young women, that obesity is a narrative. And it's about divorcing – it's about fat acceptance and divorcing health concerns from issues with fat. And these courses are offered in college campuses, and they're really – they really do great truth to vandalism, and they really harm young people. So they have these canons of literature – that they point to when they want to make points that are largely political and anti-scientific.
And you say, I mean, you're telling me that you've had tremendous success here in respect of getting these published just because you can make this nonsense up and there's no way for it to be tested against any kind of veracity or method or established theory. And so they've just published a lot of this stuff. Is that right? What happened with the Fat Studies one?
Well, before we talk about Fat Studies, and this is James speaking.
Hey, James.
Hi. Let me point out that every paper we wrote followed the same methodology, and that's why we can make the claims that we want to make. We wrote every paper by starting with the conclusion that we wanted to forward, or the absurdity that we wanted to squeeze in, or the extremely questionable, horrific ethics we wanted to push, and then made the literature that exists do our bidding so that we could get that published and thus validated at the highest level of their scholarship. So because we did have a methodology whereby we did the same thing over and over and over again, we started with what we wanted to prove and found a way to prove it, and then those were accepted by significant journals, I think that we have a lot to say about how little trust there can be for what's going on in their claims to knowledge production. You can't produce knowledge by starting with what you want to conclude that you've thought up and then making it work. That's not how it's done. With the fat bodybuilding paper in particular, we started with the idea that we wanted to make a bodybuilding category called fat bodybuilding that forwarded the idea that fat is just another kind of tissue. Yeah. And so excluding fat from professional bodybuilding is somehow prejudiced against fat and favoring muscle. And this idea is a bit ludicrous. And that paper, though, had a deeper point to it. We actually wanted to address fat studies as a field in general because they have a whole – pretty much the entire reason that field exists is to claim that obesity is a sieve. That's to stigmatize fat and that there's no possible health concerns, no connection to health – have anything to do with obesity, And so this is a real danger for people, and we're really concerned that this is being pushed and is being taught, especially to young women,
right,
that being fat is equally healthy, and it's just a narrative. The medical community is being, if an overweight person goes to the doctor and is told that she's overweight, that the doctor is committing some kind of a prejudice act or a microaggression against her, rather than actually looking out for her best interests. And I think Helen has a little bit to add to this, if you will.
Thank you, Helen.
Yeah, and I've been concerned about sort of campaigns that we've seen in the media against cancer research, who are trying to raise awareness of the connection between obesity and cancer, and also pressure, as James was just saying, on doctors not to raise obesity as a health as a cause of any sort of health problems a person might be suffering from. With the rise of obesity, and I myself do not exactly have thin privilege, so I get to hear quite a lot of this when we're talking about it. It is positively dangerous to sort of deny the objective truth, knowledge formed by evidence and science, in order to promote this idea, which stems from postmodernism, that truth and knowledge are culturally constructed by the way we talk about things. People have questioned why we, for example, looked at fat studies, which is really quite a niche field, but it really is one of the purest examples of how this conception of knowledge and how it is formed is actually affecting society and the lives and well-being of people.
Helen, you evil woman, you turned on your group. That's exceedingly nasty of you. And then exposed this stuff for what it is. Peter, would it be fair to say that a lot of the targets of your campaign here were acolytes of some kind of postmodernism? We've spoken about this to quite a large degree before, and it was absolutely one of the better discussions I've had in the last couple of months. And I think that you were quite clever to do this, but the three of you must have been giggling a lot to yourselves. When did you plan this?
What date?
We started planning this. Actually, I remember because it's near my birthday. James speaking. We started planning this in 2017, and by August we were off to the races and doing it. As far as the giggling, there was a lot of laughing. You get to say some fun things. I don't know what you can put on your show.
You could say anything you like.
Anything we like. Yeah. So we would say things like, "Hey, for now we have to sit on dildos so we can get to masturbation." Throughout the project. I've got to get to work on masturbating.
But you must have had a lot of fun crafting the kind of bizarre concepts that in some quarters have passed for actual academic reality, theory, the kind of stuff that that's foisted upon young minds.
I'll say we did have a lot of fun on that, and I'll let Helen kind of take this one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that if we were to divide it up, that there was maybe 5 to 10% of just finding this ludicrous and laughing at it. There was also a lot of frustration of trying to get into the theory and make it work and understand it, because it really is painful to read. One of the reasons that so many that few people actually understand the connections that are happening is because this kind of theory is dense, it's obscure, it's difficult to get into. And then there's a large section of time as well just spent getting angry, getting worried, realizing that the extent of the problem was even greater than we thought. James particularly had his brain kind of exploded by feminist glaciology and sort of shut down for about 3 days, because it really is funny, it is absurd in some ways, but the deeper consequences of it are much, much more serious. This is a kind of culmination of a development of 50 years undermining objective and scientific ways of establishing knowledge, and it's incredibly dangerous. This this isn't really a series of tricks or jokes or trolling. This really does matter.
Well, I think your undermining of it in a much, much shorter space of time shows just how fallacious so much of it is. And I can't say that I'm not just a little bit more than amused by this, but can you give me one more example of precisely what was published in one or two of these papers? Because it's a little bit hard to find the information at the moment. And I thought, you know, if you can give us one other example outside of the fat studies one, perhaps
sure,
we have a better idea.
Sure, we will. But we've been completely transparent this whole time. We have posted everything, including those comments in a Google Doc, and we send that to you after this phone call so that you can post it so that people can make their own decisions about what we've published and the reviewers' comments.
Absolutely. I'd be very happy to do that. That's probably better than a spoken example. So then can we move on to the reaction that you've had from the communities that would hold this stuff to be so so true and so useful and so valuable, and what their reaction to you has been?
Yeah, so this is Peter. A couple reactions that jump out immediately. Instead of soul searching, so shall we say, or thinking, wow, I wonder, is there a problem here? Many people have done exactly what one would expect them to do, which is to hunker down and then attempt motivational assassination, character assassination. So they've attacked our motivations. They said that we're radical right-wingers, Trump supporters. That's been part of the motivation. James?
So another really disappointing aspect is it seems like the response so far, which has been slow in coming, has largely been that the affected journals have indicated that their primary objective now is to put in place better systems to verify who the author is before they consider a paper, which completely elides the problem. The problem is that they couldn't distinguish our papers from legitimate scholarship, what they call legitimate scholarship in their field, because our papers are essentially indistinguishable from what they consider to be legitimate scholarship. The best evidence of that is that every time we thought that we wrote a paper and it just went way too far and there's no way that anybody would accept that, we would get the reviews back, and then the reviewers made us take it even further. That wasn't most of the time or sometimes. That was every time. So the problem isn't whether or not some pseudonymous author is writing. Mm. The problem is whether or not they can distinguish genuine scholarship from a false article, and right. They cannot. So if all they want to do is put up a shield that says, oh, well, we'll filter who the authors are better, we'll screen that better, all they're doing is trying to protect the fact that they're doing terrible scholarship and can't tell the difference.
Well, that's the point. And this stuff is at the same level of the stuff which actually does get published and hitherto has been taken terribly seriously, right?
Right. And a great example of that would be Robin DiAngelo's White Fragility, which we're in Portland right now. It's all over billboards.
Right.
Drive around, says, Portland, your white fragility is showing. And this is a concept from 2011, Robin DiAngelo's paper in a law journal, straight out of their scholarship. And here it is affecting culture. It's in everybody's face. If a white person is to push back against the ridiculous excesses, ill or bad, or whatever you want, critical race theory, they can pretty much guarantee to hear back that they are guilty of white fragility and that they're just pushing back because their privilege has made them weak.
Yeah, I'm astonished. Have you had positive responses from people, not necessarily the ones who would like the kind of content that these journals often publish, but from the rest of society, from perhaps people you didn't expect in well-known professions and serious-minded academics?
Yes, actually, the vast majority of the responses, so far as we can tell so far, have been positive. To give you a few examples, we thought when we were working on this project that we would be just taken to task and torn apart by the New York Times, but they did an extremely balanced and fair article on us. More to the point, Mother Jones, a very left-wing magazine, came down on our side.
Oh, wow.
BuzzFeed, which tears everything apart that goes against mm-hmm. the left narrative, has also published an extremely fair and balanced article that raises many, many of our points in a great way. The Atlantic has come out strongly in our favor. The response has been overwhelmingly more positive than we thought. And so that's very, very encouraging for us.
Do you think that this will have any kind of effect. I mean, I like the way that they complain about the whistleblower rather than the person committing the fraud here. And that's happened in South Africa. We had a recent example in the press where the Huffington Post, which you'll be probably be quite chuffed to know, is shut down in South Africa because it couldn't garner a big enough audience or any advertising. The Huffington Post kept publishing, you know, extreme leftist ideas, and a male by the name, well, his pseudonym was Shelley Garland. He got an article published or a column published in the Huffington Post, which was full of lies and rubbish. And he then revealed himself to be a fraud. And instead of the Huffington Post taking, you know, ownership of the problem and admitting that they want to publish wildly ridiculous stuff, they actually went after this guy in a kind of a witch hunt and made his life a living hell for a long time. I can imagine that there are some on the left who will be trying to do that to you guys.
Well, as far as we can tell, and just the bad timing of it, the first statement coming out against us came out just before we got on this interview. The largest and most esteemed journal in gender studies called Gender and Society has put out a statement. And they said that we're committing an attack on truth, as opposed to the idea that they're the ones who did truth as a project to make their stuff more believable. And that was shared with, I found that by it being shared with me on Twitter by somebody, I don't know, somebody not small, though, with a big audience. And this person has called upon us to apologize. So let me just say right now, and we'll make this absolutely clear on your show before anybody else's, we're not apologizing to anybody. We didn't publish the papers. We wrote papers to test their system. Their system decided that those papers deserve to be published. Their system owns the problem.
Right, but they're not owning it. I'm curious, Peter, in all the conversation we've had before, this is a very important victory, I would think. I know your feelings on many academics, your fellow academics. I know how you have railed against some of the ridiculousness that you've seen going on in campuses. How do you think the student body will feel about this?
I don't know the answer to that question. I have done my best to not talk about it in class, and I intend to continue to not talk about it in class.
Right.
Partially because I don't want it to disrupt the class, even though it is related to the material. And the other reason is I've been told explicitly by the administration I'm not allowed to render my opinion on protected classes.
All right.
In the classroom, in my ethics classes. And it could be construed that this falls into this category and I could be thrown out of the university. So I do not talk about this, or I will not be talking about this in the university. I'll be strictly talking about this outside of the university.
And for you, James and Helen?
I'm not quite sure what to expect, except a great deal of social media backlash and left-wing media backlash once this kind of outrage machine starts to ginny into full production. Mm-hmm. I work outside of the academic system already, so I don't have, for instance, an Office of Diversity and Inclusion or a bias response team that can come down on me. I also live in the Southeast, which is fairly conservative. So,
right.
In fact, it's extremely conservative. So I don't think that it's terribly likely that I'm going to face the kinds of repercussions that Peter will, that directly attack my profession. But I've also been warned that that makes me, since I'm more or less untouchable by the normal institutional methods that they control, that's going to put me at risk for greater social media and perhaps a potential professional backlash, in the sense that I probably will never be allowed to publish an academic paper again. Oh, well. And I will probably not find myself in a university appointment until and unless the universities decide they need to reform themselves. So if I had wanted that avenue of profession, that's closed door to me. I expect that it's likely that people will try to dox me, as they say, yeah, put my personal information online and then see what happens with that. But I do have a degree of cushion living in the Southeast.
Well, you would be in hallowed company if you ended up being the enemy of these trolls on the social media left. And Helen, how about you? I mean, you're the only woman here. They always try to take pot shots at you, you know, and I was obviously being very, very much tongue lodged in cheek and flippant when I said earlier that you turned on your kind. But, you know, when when this happens, people will call you all kinds of names, as I'm sure they will, James and Peter. Is this going to affect your work in any way?
Yep, I'm certainly already fielding quite a lot of very nasty comments. But yeah, it could well be much more difficult for me to go back and do my PhD or to work in a university. But also there's a large extent of attacking my magazine, Aereo. I've at the moment it's just kind of low-grade individuals on Twitter who are trying to suggest that Aereo is a reactionary right outlet, which
haven't thrown Nazi at you yet. Any of those?
Oh, that happens. That happens quite regularly. Yes, I haven't had that one this time yet. But no, I mean,
have you all been called Trump supporters yet?
Sorry,
you've all been called Trump supporters already?
Oh yes. No. I've been accused of we've all been called Trump supporters. I've been accused of voting for Trump, and that will continue no matter how often I point out that I'm not an American citizen. And my main worry is that our writers, Aereo writers, who are slightly more, we have slightly more of them on the left than on the right, so that sometimes I have to encourage conservative input to try and stay balanced. Could get tarred with some kind of unfair brush. So I'm a bit concerned for Aereo, but anybody who wants to look at our output will see that we are. That it is a majority of academics, not all academics, and far more of them are on the left or in the centre. We have nothing right wing there, but that's my worry. I'm nothing far right. That's my worry people are going to try and put down Aereo's reputation.
Well, all I can say is I'm extremely amused. I'm also very, very pleased to see that there are people who are. Quietly testing the limits of what can become quite ridiculous on somewhere else. Three, the best of, and your Peter knows this already, of people all over the world who are just standing up in whatever way they can to the nonsense. The nonsense which is put into children and young students' heads when they're still soft, and they're forced to believe stuff that just is patently untrue and sometimes utterly ridiculous. So, Helen, as far as Aereo is concerned, we'll all support you. Peter, you know we continue to pay attention to everything that you do, both in academia and outside of it. And James, I wish you the best of luck as well. Thank you all very, very much for doing what you did here. It's brave, and I'm sure that there are many people all over the world who will support you.
Thank you. We really appreciate that, and we love your show, and it was an absolute pleasure to be on today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.